Want to say again what we've said so often in the last couple of years. We appreciate your patience and generous and forgiving spirit as we navigate plans that we wrote in pencil. We had fully intended to launch completely our Bible classes again today, and no sooner had the words come out of our mouth than I think all three of our local public schools said, oh, we got to go to distance learning. We got to close for a few days. So we're trying to be supportive of our public schools. Imperfect plans in an imperfect age by imperfect people. That's what we got. But we're hoping to get back to it very soon. We are going to have some adult classes today. The young adults will meet down the hall, the college group as they had planned. I know Rusty's doing his workshop down the hall today. That's going to begin. And then I'm going to be filling in for Bill Nelson in the small auditorium today, giving him the week off, but we'll still have an adult class after worship today if you'd like to participate in that. And then hopefully next week, we'll wait and see, because that's all anybody's been doing for 2 years anyway. So doing the best we can. Appreciate your patience. This is Missions Month, or so we have called it, where we're trying to focus attention on the mission and task of the church, and appreciate Rusty's good work and his presentation. One component of the mission of the church is speaking about our faith and convictions. It's not the only component. I think it was St. Francis of Assisi who said, go everywhere preaching the gospel, and if necessary, use words. There's lots of ways to do it without words, but eventually you want to convey to people what it is you believe in, what are your convictions, why you're doing what you're doing. Eventually, some words come with that. And we live in a climate and a culture where that sort of words, that sort of word has become a little bit taboo. Or maybe we could say it differently. By recognizing that it's always easy to speak about faith when everybody agrees, right? When I'm in a room full of Sooner fans, it's really easy to talk about OU sports and so forth. I went with my father-in-law down to the OSU game down in Dallas for their championship, Big 12 championship. I was surrounded by lots of people wearing orange. I didn't talk a lot about OU and that particular lynch mob of Oklahoma State fans. I just felt like it was a bad time to talk about my personal convictions that were vastly superior. So instead, I just kept that to myself and said, go Pokes, and, did what I could. It's easy to talk about something when everybody around you agrees, right? When you live in a climate or a culture where faith is less popular, and in fact is occasionally even just derided and looked down upon, it's a little harder to speak candidly about it. You feel like there's some pressure to make your faith, you can have it, but keep it as private as possible. Private convictions in a public sphere. Christians just, I'm convinced, don't have that option. We don't have to be obnoxious about our faith. We absolutely shouldn't be rude about our faith. We can absolutely improve the way we speak about our faith, but not speaking about our faith will never be for us an option. Somehow and in some way, maybe creative new ways, maybe ways we'll learn in a workshop down the hall that Rusty's going to teach, we'll find ways to do it, but not doing it is never an option. So today's topic is basically an answer to this question. Why do we speak about our faith? Why is it imperative? And maybe if I can put that in our heads more clearly, the how will work itself out. I'm going to leave the how to other people, but the why I think we can talk about. And to get a sense of the why, we're going to actually transport ourselves back in time a little bit and listen to some words from Isaiah, the 62nd chapter, which Colin read for us earlier. And it's from another period of time, but Isaiah chapter 62, the first five verses, is a prophet, Isaiah, speaking about Israel. He's talking about the significance of talking about Israel. And it's important to note when we read this passage that Isaiah, much like ourselves, lives at a time where Israel patriotism was not a great idea, right? Being super positive about the nation of Israel and the God of Israel and the hope of Israel, let's just say Israel had fallen on very hard times. It looked like, in fact, that Israel might have come to an end. And so it was a great time to be cynical about Israel. It was a very difficult time to be positive about Israel. And yet Isaiah says, still, I have to speak. And so what we're going to look at is what he says about his speech about Israel and see how that compares to the way we have to talk about our faith and convictions today. Start with me in Isaiah chapter 62, verse 1. For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent. For Jerusalem's sake, I will not be quiet until her righteousness goes forth as brightness and her salvation as a burning torch. Isaiah says, I'm going to keep talking. He says, I can't be quiet. It's not an option for me. I'm going to keep on speaking. I'm going to keep on talking about Israel until it becomes the thing I speak about. Isaiah's not dumb. He knows that Israel right now is not a burning torch of glory and righteousness. Right now, it's just a mess. He says, that's all right. I'm going to keep talking until we get there. I'm going to keep talking until it's true. First observation then I would make about why Christians speak about our faith comes from Isaiah's own behavior. The prophet spoke about Israel to Israel for Israel. Isn't that interesting? This is not even at this point, we're going to get to it later in the next couple of verses. This is not even what we might call evangelism in the sense of going out and telling somebody, hello, have you heard of Israel? I'd like to tell you about Israel. That's not what he's doing in this particular passage. He's talking to Israel about Israel for the sake of Israel. That is, his point is, before we can ever convince a Gentile that God is the one true God and the God of Israel has something in store for his people, he says, I've got to convince you that God is the one true God, the God of Israel has something in store for his people. Until Israel burns with righteousness, I've got to keep telling you that Israel needs to burn with righteousness, right? The first reason the prophet is speaking, borderline selfish, if you'll just permit me that phrase. I don't mean that in a bad way. But he's speaking for his own benefit and for his people's own benefit. It was in Israel's benefit to be spokesman of Israel. It was important. It was their task to be broadcasters of the glory of God. Up in the loft area, Derek has been looting and pillaging up there and making it a youth area. And one of the things we've been doing is looking what's in some of the closets and stuff. And we've been finding some, what's a nice word for really, really old? Antique sound equipment from years gone by. You know what good a microphone is that's unplugged and in a closet? Absolutely nothing. It's absolutely good for nothing. A microphone has a job. It's to take a voice and to make it louder. If it's not plugged in, if it's not being used, it is the saddest looking object on a shelf. It has no function. It has no purpose. It collects dust. Israel was made to broadcast the glory of God. You know what happens when it's not doing that? Not only does the rest of the world suffer because they weren't hearing about the glory of God, Israel suffered because it wasn't doing what it was made to do. So I think we can apply that to us today. Usually when we talk about evangelism, we talk about those people out there need it, and I'm going to get there. But the first point that Isaiah makes is, I can't be quiet for my own sake. We speak for our own sake so that we can see God's glory. We need to have those words on our lips. We need to speak the gospel. We need to say it so that we can believe it. We need to say it because we were made to say it. And when we're not speaking the glorious words of God, we are less than we could be. If no one ever heard anything we had to say, God's people would still be better for having spoken the words of the gospel. We speak for our own sake, if nothing else. If it accomplishes no other task, it does at least that much. It makes us more of who we ought to be by speaking the glorious words of God. In verse 2, he continues then, "The nations shall see your righteousness, and all the kings your glory, and you shall be called by a new name that the mouth of the Lord will give." Okay. Step one, we speak for our own good because we're made to be speakers. We're made to talk about the glory of God. And in this case, for Isaiah, the glory of Israel. He says, but then number two, and it comes very quickly after number one. Of course, the point of speaking is so that somebody can hear what you have to say. He says, the nations, not Israel specifically, those other nations need to know what God is doing among his people. It is to their benefit. The whole creation was designed by God to bring him glory. The whole creation was made to worship God. But when the nations don't see what God is doing, when they don't hear the God of creation proclaimed, then they cannot worship God. You ever thought about it this way? We do missions so that more people can worship God. We usually put it in different terms. We talk about it in terms of salvation. And again, that's fine. We do share the gospel to save souls because that's what Jesus does, no question about it. But another way to look at it, that Isaiah's talking about it, is that the nations need to bring God glory. And they can't if we don't tell them the glorious things God is doing. God deserves the worship and adoration of his creation. And the only way he can get it is if we show and put God on display the way he deserves. So Isaiah says, the prophet spoke to the nations so they could see God at work in Israel. By looking at what God was doing here, they could bring God glory there. Israel wasn't a particularly evangelistic nation. It wasn't its task. If you read the Old Testament, you never hear kind of a Great Commission passage as such, where priests are told, go make disciples of all nations. It's just not the way the Old Testament is structured. But what they are told, when you're the best Israel you can be, when you bring God glory the way you're supposed to, when you speak the wonderful words of God, the nations can't help but hear it. And God will be glorified in those nations, not because they moved here and became us, but because God's glory went on display wherever they were. God's glory went out from Jerusalem, out from the temple, out from Israel, to every part of the earth. Likewise, I think we have to keep that in mind for our own task. We speak for the sake of the world, so that the nations can see what God has done in Jesus Christ. A lot of people are cynical and doubtful about what has come to be called organized religion, about the Christian faith in general. And I don't blame our culture for that. I don't blame the world for that. I don't blame pagan philosophers and universities for that. I don't blame either political party for that. I blame Christians for that. Our job is to show what Christianity looks like. Our job is to speak the beautiful words of Jesus Christ, to tell his story. When people see Jesus Christ, they can't help but see God. If they're cynical, if they're doubtful, if they're suspicious, who do you think made them that way? We have to do better. We are the spokesman. The glory of God is going to go out from his church into the world, into the nations. And if we aren't doing that task, we can't complain that it's dark out there when we put our light under a bushel. We have to be the people speaking those values in the world. That's our task. That's our job. And God has brought glory among the nations when we do. And when I say nations, I'm including ours, right? Across the street, on campus, in your neighborhood, and around the world, God should be spoken of. And Christians are the ones who do it. Next, he says, "You shall be a crown of beauty in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. You shall no more be termed forsaken. Your land shall no more be termed desolate, but you shall be called, my delight is in her, and your land married. For the Lord delights in you, and your land shall be married." If you read other translations of this, Colin gave us one in the Call to Worship. It actually puts in the peculiar Hebrew names that are littered through this verse, like Marzapah and Beulah, where we get the old hymn, Beulah Land. But what's going on in the passage is a distinction, a contrast between the way other people saw Israel and what God saw when he looked at Israel. What did other people see when they looked at Israel? At that time and place, Israel was a mess, as I said at the very beginning. They saw a widow. They saw someone without hope in the world, destitute, forlorn, abandoned, forsaken. If you ever had a God, you haven't got one now. That's the way the world saw Israel. Isaiah says, I speak because people need to see what God sees. What does God see when he looked at Israel? He saw his bride. He saw something beautiful, someone he loved and something he cherished. And that had never changed. No matter what rose and fall, whatever happened in human history, when he looked at those people, he saw the people he adored and loved. I speak to women in the audience for just a moment, okay? Ladies, married ladies in particular. Can I tell you a secret that somebody should have told you a long time ago, okay? When your husbands look at you, all they ever see is the woman they took on a date the very first time. When the years pass and decades come and go, you look at yourself in the mirror and time has changed you and you see a very different person. You see beauty fading, right? That's what you see. You see every blemish and every imperfection. I'm telling you and I'm promising you, all your husband has ever seen when he looks at you is his beautiful bride. Okay. That's the way husbands tend to look at their wives. And I'm saying that even personally, Celine had this great New Year's resolution, no surgeries in 2022. It lasted 8 days, okay? And we added another scar to the list, right? I don't see any of them. I still see the girl I married, and that's all she'll ever be to me. And I'm telling you, ladies, that's all your husband sees. What does God see when he looks at Israel? Does he see its warts and imperfections, its scars, self-inflicted through bad knife safety? See, I said something nice, now I have to come back and say something mean, and that evens it out. Listen, a lot of Israel's wounds were self-inflicted. God would be well within his rights to say, you did this to yourself, and I don't want you anymore. What does Isaiah say? When I see Israel, when God sees Israel, he sees his bride. Why does Isaiah speak? To help the nations and to help Israel see what God saw. Right? When we look at the world and we see it the way we see it, it's a very dark and grim and gruesome place. But if we could see the world the way God sees it, a place worth the blood of his son, Jesus Christ, that would be a very different image indeed. We need to speak the gospel today so that others can see what God sees in them. What people see are all the worst things about themselves. And so they cover it up with distraction and with amusement and try to find tools to learn how to ignore the worst things about themselves because that's what's waiting in the mirror every morning. But what if I could tell you that what God sees in you is different? You see a drunk, you see an addict, you see a sinner, you see someone who has been unfaithful to promises and oaths made, you see a failure in every aspect in your life who has hurt themselves and hurt others. You see those things, God sees someone for whom his son would die and has. And that's all he's ever seen in you, the one that he loves. Why do we speak the gospel? So that we can all start to see each other the way God sees us. Which leads to this last little passage in verse 5, which might be my favorite. For as a young man marries a young woman, so shall your sons marry you. And as the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall your God rejoice over you. Remember that bit I gave you a minute ago and said, no matter how many years pass, the husband looks and sees his bride. Isn't young love just awful? It's wasted on the young, right? Young love, it's sugary and sweet, and it's so naive, and they're so in love, and it's so terrible to watch, and you just want to be cynical when you see it. Wasted on the young, isn't it? Right. Well, what is it about young love? They're absolutely infatuated with each other, right? All they can see is each other's goodness. It's not a terrible thing, right? Yeah, I can get you into trouble, but it's not a terrible thing. That's my point. God says that's the way he sees Israel. And Isaiah says that's the way I'm going to speak about it. As a bridegroom rejoices over the bride. The prophet spoke out of sincere love and joy. Isaiah, when he says, I can't keep silent, it wasn't because it was in his job description and he'd get fired as a prophet if he didn't. Isaiah spoke because he actually loved his subject matter. I was giving some mentorship, poor mentorship, but I was giving some mentorship to a young man who's working in ministry and trying to develop as a preacher. We had recorded one of his sermons, and I sat down with him on a Monday morning and watched the sermon with him and kind of, you know, gave him some pointers and things. And I love this kid and I love him to death. I still do. It was terrible. It was a really, really bad sermon, right? The whole time the sermon is awkward and clunky and stilted, and you know, it wasn't clear. He knew where he was going with his own material. It lasted 7 minutes. It felt like 70, right? It was tough. There was one bright spot in the sermon. It's when he got to his analogy, and his analogy involved his wife. And in that moment, suddenly he transformed into a master orator. And for like 40 or 50 seconds in that 7-minute sermon, it was a masterpiece. He was talking about his wife with familiarity, with joy, with genuine affection. And it came through in everything that he said. And when we got to the end, I said, that was the best part. You knew your subject matter. You loved your subject matter. You were familiar. No one had to coax you into it. And the advice I gave him was kind of rough, and I had to hug him afterward. I said, I need you to talk about God the way you talked about your wife. Until you love God more, you won't be able to speak about him the way he deserves. Folks, every one of us have something we love. It might be a hobby, might be a sport or an activity. You might love your job or your kids or your wife. Everybody's got something they love. And you don't have to force them to talk about it. Quite the opposite. You have to force them to shut up about it, right? The rest of us are ready to move on to the conversation, and they won't be quiet because they genuinely love their subject matter. Isaiah says, I talk about Israel, you know why? Because I genuinely love Israel. I talk about God, you know why? Because I genuinely love God. Christians, I'm here to tell you, we don't need one more sermon trying to guilt you into the Great Commission. When you love God the way you should, we won't be able to shut you up. Like Isaiah said it this way, we need to be able to say it. We speak because we cannot be silent. Because the love of God and of the gospel and of our fellow man burns within us so passionately that we cannot be shut up. It's not possible for us. That our bones would burst if we tried to contain the gospel. Do you love your God and do you cherish his gospel that much? If you do, the next step is easy. Just open your mouth and it comes out to people in everyday conversations, everywhere you go. If you don't, then I found the problem. We've got to develop and cultivate within ourselves an actual joy in speaking of God and of his son, Jesus Christ. It comes from personal devotion. It comes from worship. It comes from a realization of what God has done in us. And I want you to spend your days and your weeks and your months and your years cultivating that love. People will see it. They won't be able to shut you up. Would you pray with me? Our Father and our God, we have not spoken of you as we should, and likely the reason is we have not loved you with our whole heart. Your Son taught us that to love you is the greatest commandment, and perhaps we have not understood the depth of that command. Help us to grow in love and devotion to you, and then burst out of us with sincere joy that the world may see your glory in us, because we cannot be silent. These things we pray in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.